Coming up next, another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237.
You know what the bottom line is for black people out here? It's quite simple. You must learn.
Welcome to another edition of Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237. With us, we have a very special guest. He is the incomparable Lawrence Chris Parker, better known by his stage names as KRS-One and Teacher. He is a rapper from the South Bronx. KRS-One is the acronym for Knowledge Reigns Supreme Over Everybody. He rose to prominence as part of the hip hop group Boogie Down Productions, which was formed with the late DJ Scott LaRock in the mid-1980s. KRS-One has published 20 albums. He has written the most rhymes in hip hop history. KRS-One has written 3 books and is a frequent lecturer on college campuses. Welcome to Reaching Out. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you for reaching out.
Yes. So listen, I thought of you and we met because you formed the Hip Hop Alliance, which is a union for hip hop artists. I want to talk to you today about the idea of forming a union, what you've accomplished so far, who's involved in it, and and later I want to talk to you about the 50th anniversary of hip hop being around for 50 years. So yes. Let's begin with the concept of the Hip Hop Alliance.
Well, let's start with the idea that here you have a billion-dollar industry, hip-hop. And let me also break this down for our viewers as well, because you know, when we say hip-hop, sometimes we say hip-hop music, hip-hop culture, the hip-hop industry. They are different things. Hip-hop as an industry, obviously, we're talking about the entertainment industry, music business 101, just regular music business that includes, you know, recording, touring, publishing, this kind of thing, the business of the music. That's the industry. But then you have hip hop's music. That's rap music, simple and plain, some DJing, cut mixing and scratching and so on. The culture of hip hop, however, is the center of all of this. Without our culture, without our way to be, our repeated behaviors, the way we view the world, our worldview, none of this other stuff comes into play. So those of us that are culture keepers, in that lack of a better term, those of us that even created the culture, have built the culture itself, you know, when we look at what is going to preserve the ongoingness of hip hop, not so much the effects, but the causes of those effects, you have to begin to think about workers, labor. You have to begin to think about how people are going to survive partaking in hip hop. Like, for instance, there was a time where people used to say, you know, you say, if you said, I'm going to be a rapper, I'm going to be a DJ, somebody would quickly advise you, you know, you should get a college degree so you have something to fall back on in case your career doesn't work out. That's what we were told in the 80s. Now it's, I want to go to college. You know, you might want to go in the studio and become a rapper, DJ, in case your degree doesn't work out. And the times have changed now to where we as rappers and DJs and B-boys and B-girls and so on, we're making enough money to support families, buy homes, invest, this kind of thing. But our entire way of making money is unregulated. Some will say, leave it that way. You know, just leave it that way, unregulated, unprotected. This is what it is. And I see the benefits to that as well. Matter of fact, we're benefiting now. But we know that this is unsustainable. And the reason we know it is because of the turnaround rate with jobs like for instance, you're a promoter. When you're a promoter, you hire about 20 some odd people between hospitality, people driving the vehicles, security, this, that, and the other. Most of these positions have no protection. People get paid whatever, and that's the end of it. There's no health benefits. There's nothing going towards your future. You can't make a career out of this. And there's no reason why it shouldn't be. You should be able to make a career out of hospitality. You should get a standard rate for hospitality. You should be able to be protected, certain insurances. You should be treated a certain way. Certain standards within your work ethic should happen like that, just for hospitality in that sense. So not to go on about it, but I'm giving you an example, just one, at least. I want to give you one other example of HHA, Hip Hop Alliance is what we call ourselves. But one area is we have a bunch of different little jobs that are going on within hip hop that if approached properly can become careers for people. New jobs, new types of work can emerge for people if we just focus on ourselves and get organized. That's one area of it. The other side is the exploitation that hip hop as a culture is feeling right now. For instance, so you got photographers, and you know, I love photographers. You know, it's all good.
It represents some in our union, yes. Sure.
No doubt.
Yes.
But there's a rule, an unwritten rule, and it has moved into a written rule, but there's an unwritten rule that says, that if a photographer takes a picture of you, the photographer owns the picture. And I find that to be unjust, especially a person like myself, where people are constantly taking pictures of me, and then they can take those pictures and sell them commercially. It's their property. But I don't get anything from this. The person is not even obligated to pay me or compensate me or trade. There's no form of exchange. And the folklore is that this is normal. You just take a picture of a person and you own the photo and can do whatever. Now, of course, I can't say you do whatever you want with it, because there are, you know, you can sue for slander if they misuse your image and so on. You there are areas you can go. But ultimately, the photograph belongs to the photographer. There's a few cases where, I think it was Madonna, or was it J-Lo? Might have been both of them. It was J-Lo, right? Where she either was sued or had to sue a photographer to use her own picture. I think so she took a picture online of herself and used it, and the photographer sued her, I think it was. You can look this up. Don't take my report as accurate. But the theme of what I'm saying here is that artists are having to sue or being sued. You're entering into legality and having to go to court because somebody took a picture of you. And this is why a lot of artists say, no pictures. They walk through, no pictures, no pictures. Now, it's hard to say that. You can get the back of the head or something, or whatever you can get with your phone. But the professional photographer can take a picture of an artist and not pay the artist. Now, I think that needs to change. I think the artist should at least be compensated. If you're a professional photographer, the artist should be compensated. The same thing with interviews. It's just known in the industry. I'm the BBC, British Broadcasting Corporation. Give me an interview for the BBC. Now, most people say, wow, it's the BBC. Let me go ahead and take this interview. But for us, those of us that make money on interviews, like our speaking is our livelihood. This is how we eat. We are rappers, or those that are lecturers, or any kind of public speaking. This is how we make our livelihood. So it's just known in the industry, though, that MTV, BET, BBC, CNN, and any corporate media in that sense just comes and asks for your interview, and you're just supposed to give it. No compensation, nothing. You're just supposed to give, and the reciprocal is you want to be seen and heard in our media. That's the payoff. That's the exchange. So the idea of having these major corporations pay for interviews is yet another piece here. You know, we mentioned about the 50th anniversary of hip hop. One of the arguments within the 50th anniversary of hip hop is that the pioneers of hip hop have not received their just due. They started this billion-dollar industry or this culture that spawned a billion-dollar industry, and they are not feeling the money at all. This is the argument, or part of the argument. And I mention that because here we are at the center of why that argument exists. Meaning, if you're constantly gonna go to Grandmaster Flash and say, tell me your story again for free, you're devaluing his story every time he tells it. Now, he don't mind telling his story because it's him. And of course, if you're young, you don't understand the publishing game, don't understand the advertising game, don't understand actually the intellectual property, that you're actually speaking books into existence. But because nobody is telling you this, a book writer comes along and says, well, just tell me, how did you start? How did you do it? And you just run down your story. Man, it was like this. Back in 75, I did this, this, and this, and then that. They get to write it up, publish the book. They own the story too, by the way. And this is what has devalued hip hop over the last 50 years. Our giving nature, just giving, giving, giving. And of course, not just giving like we're charitable giving. You asked me. So I answered you, but I didn't know that my answer was worth billions. My answer to you was worth billions of dollars. We didn't know that. Others did not know it either. We all were surprised, even corporations. This is why, you know, I can't knock these record companies too much. There's a lot of knocking that can be done, oh yes. But I can't knock them 100%. Because there is, I would say, a 25%, let's say. 75% was a ripoff. But there is a 25% that says, but we couldn't have done it without you. Meaning that when rap music was first coming into commercial viability, coming, you know, people started looking at it. After Rapper's Delight, 1979, Sugar Hill Gang. 2 million records are sold, everybody's looking. Curtis Blow was the first rapper to sign to a major label. He signed to Mercury Records. And Curtis Blow is the actual founder of the HHA, of the Hip Hop Alliance. But Curtis Blow back in the days, I think it was 81, was the first one to sign to a major label. And that opened the doorway, that opened the floodgates. And you would see, I mean, how karmic is that, that the actual founder of hip hop's first union was the actual first person to sign to a recording deal. And of course, I ain't gotta talk for Curtis himself. He'll tell you his own horror stories, okay? He has his own stories. But had he went in with a union behind, had he went in with union knowledge behind him, had he went in with just, I would even say just a decent business advisor even, and not to disrespect anybody who was advising him then, but nobody knew what this thing was going to become. And this is why it's so important to have principles, standards. So when these unexpected things do arise, you at least have a structure to grab them, protect yourself if you need to, maneuver around if you need to. We were just young kids out there with nothing. Just here we are, And look at it. Here we are, and what we have on is about to become a billion-dollar industry. Our words, chill out. Yo, I'm fly, I'm fresh, I'm dope. That's about to become a billion-dollar industry. Our choice of music, it's no big deal. I just got a cassette tape. My man made the tape. It, you know, his name is Grandmaster Caz, and he made a tape, and he's just rhyming. What is it? It's nothing. It's just us. Nah, this is about to start a billion-dollar industry. And this is the thing for today. If you can see that lesson over a 50-year period, try to project what the next 50 years is going to be like. We thought back then we were just being ourselves, chilling. We doing us, and this is what it is. So we did us, and it became all these different real industries. So the next 50 years, what are we talking about then? Now we have knowledge of ourselves. We are aware now of what went down. It was an expensive lesson, but nonetheless, we got the lesson though. Now the next 50 years, oh no, it's time to unionize. It's time for us to unify, first of all, in consciousness and then in movement. We got to think on the same page, and then we got to move according to that thinking. And it's ripe right now. We're only 50. We're only 50, by the way. So the idea of this first semi-centennial, the lessons learned. Okay, so photographers, we need you to start paying artists for your photography. Next 50 years. We need you to spell hip-hop with a capital H. Those that write about hip-hop, this lowercase hip-hop, it was cool. We didn't understand. We knew what it was. But now we are a proper noun. Hip hop is a specific group of people. We are known in the world. We are a culture. We are the name of a community. Can we get that capital H, lowercase IP, space capital H, lowercase OP, New York Times, Daily News, Chicago Tribune, Associated Press? You know, can we get that capital H? And I think we can. I think we can. It takes a unified voice sometimes to just bring these issues to the table. And people go, oh, wow, you know what? You're right. We need to be doing this, this, and this. Now, of course, other things are going to take a fight. And there lies the center of the union spirit, where we're not going to take no, or we can't, or push this off to another time. No, that's not happening. We're not making demands at first. We're asking at first. But we're going to act with force. And that force is our unity. That force is, and not only our unity of thought. I mentioned unity of thought and action, but our unity in dollars. Unity in dollars. We're sitting on a billion-dollar industry. Back that up. We're sitting on a billion-dollar culture, okay, before we even get to the industry. Okay, we got some very powerful and rich hip-hoppers that love this culture as well, and really have no place to donate legitimately or to support even legitimately. Sure, there's charities out here. There's a lot of charities and people doing amazing things, and artists and actors and sports figures, and everybody's given to some kind of cause. You can't find an artist with any kinds of means that he or she or they are not connected to some kind of charity these days. It is what it is. Hip hop is already giving massive amounts of money in a variety of areas, but we're not giving it to ourselves. We're not giving it to ourselves. We're working individually and we're doing whatever we can do individually. But the minute we unite, and we have, that's what the Hip Hop Alliance is. We've received such support. And let me just delve into that real quick. In terms of the internal structure on that. So our good friend Tara Martin is leading the way there as well. Our secretary Andrea is leading the way there. Strong women in the game, and they're leading the way there. Obviously, like I said, Curtis Blow is our founder, along with Chuck D. Chuck D, a Public Enemy, and Curtis Blow appointed me And I have to say it like that because those of us that are hip hop, you got to feel the brevity of that. Yeah. My good friend Chuck and Curtis Blow, come on, I was a kid, okay, listening to These Are the Breaks. We all have taken a piece of Curtis Blow and put in our rhymes and this, that, and the other. I mean, look at Nas and If I Ruled the World. I mean, everybody got some of Curtis Blow right. in at some point. To have this brother, this elder, we call him Elder Curtis Blow, would have him come through and say, no, it's you that have to lead this movement. It's you that we respect, that we watch. We think you can do this. That's big. That's, you go away for a minute, you go to the bathroom, you shut the door, and you let it out, okay? Because that right there is very rare, and I would also say difficult for some, not for Curtis, but for some, for one king to honor another king, for one man to honor another man. This is difficult in our community. So I don't take it lightly when another man, another king, an icon in the culture comes and says, no, I think you can lead what I'm thinking about. I took that as a high honor. And then he backs it up with Chuck D, who says, you have to do this because we need you at this moment. So between the three of us, and let me also shout Dougie Fresh as well, who was the first chairman of HHA. But we can see Dougie is running around with Slick Rick, really producing major concert events. Him and his friend Jeff Epstein over there at Universal Attractions, they're doing some amazing things on the concert level with artists, myself, Kane, Rakim, excuse me, like I said, Slick Rick, obviously, with Dougie Fresh, but there's also EPMD, there's Chubb Rock, there's others. And, you know, we're running around the country packing out arenas. And it's Dougie Fresh that's really at the helm of that and getting some really, not just good dates in terms of money, but the places that we're landing in. Dougie's being very strategic with, and I respect him for that. You know, we're in specific places. Not just running around, yo, whoever wants to buy the tour. Nah, it's not that. It's like, no, we're going over here because over here is this. And it's actually pretty brilliant to actually watch. But this is our internal structure. Oh, let me not forget MC Light and her manager, Lynn, Miss Lynn Richardson. We appointed her as treasurer and financial advisor as well. She's excellent at it. We all agree. We've heard her. Preached to us about how fiscally ignorant we all are, and we appreciated the beat. And so we're getting ourselves organized under her leadership as well. All of this is going on. You know, it takes time to file papers. We got to get signatures up. We got people who, of course, will sign up any petition and say, yes, I'm with this. But we're not going that route. We're making sure. We're taking our time, too, by the way. We know there's an urgency, but we got to do this right. And who am I preaching to? I'm preaching to the choir here. You know more than anybody that if you're going to win, you got to win at the beginning. You got to do it right. You got to cross your T's. You got to dot those I's. You got to show up on time, and you got to be what you say you are. And so the union side of HHA is creeping along. We just got our first 501c3 about last week. That was last week, and we've been at this what, a year now. Mm-hmm. In that sense, so just last week, we 501c3 came through. You know, the IRS tax status and all of that came through just last week.
Can I stop you for 1 second?
Please.
We ran out of time for this segment, but I'm going to ask you to come back next week, and we're going to continue the conversation.
What do you mean when you say I'm rebellious? Because I don't accept everything that you're telling us. What are you selling us? The creator dwelling us. I sit in your unknown class while you're failing us. I failed your class because I ain't with your reasoning. You're trying to make me...
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to tune in again each and every Saturday at this same time for another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237.